Thanks for listening to Think Out Loud Online. While you're here, why not support OPB and Think Out Loud? Just click on the Contribute Now button. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Dave Miller. It's Think Out Loud. Today on the show, we'll look at the importance of self-control in preschoolers and how it affects what they learn much later in life. That's coming up in the second half of the show, so you're going to have to wait for it. We start with the first of our in-depth conversations about measures you'll soon see on the Oregon ballot. Measure 80 is one of the most high-profile measures. It would allow unlicensed personal cultivation of marijuana and the sale of marijuana through state-licensed stores. Proponents say this would bring much-needed tax money to state coffers and turn a black market into a regulated one. Opponents say it would undermine public health and public safety in Oregon. Do you support Measure 80? Are you against it? How do you think it would affect your life? Our number is 1-888-665-5865. Our website is opb.org/thinkoutloud. I'm joined right now by Roy Kaufman. He's a communications director for Measure 80, and John Trumbo, Umatilla County Sheriff and a member and a past president of the Oregon State Sheriffs Association. Roy Kaufman and John Trumbo, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Roy Kaufman, starting with you, so we can understand how Measure 80 would work if it were to pass. Walk us through the basics here. What would the system mean?
Sure. So basically, Measure 80 takes an approach that we already have in place for things like liquor that are controlled substances and replicates that model of regulation, taxation, enforcement, and education. So what that means is Measure 80 will create a state commission that would regulate and tax the production and sale of marijuana to adults 21 and over. And that would mean state-licensed stores only as the only place where you could purchase marijuana if you're an adult. It means maintaining all of the stiff DUII penalties that are in place. And it means improving and introducing new penalties for the sale of marijuana to minors or the provision of marijuana to minors. So what we're saying is, we know that the prohibition of alcohol was an epic failure and really led to basically organized crime. The regulation of alcohol has been much more successful, even though it has its challenges. We should be doing the same thing with marijuana, which is already an existing marketplace but is totally unregulated, and we're missing the opportunities that come with regulation.
You're talking about regulation and sale, but there's also a sort of grow-it-yourself component to this measure. How would that work?
So one of the things that people, I think, really need to think about is everything that happens in this marijuana policy conversation happens under the overarching umbrella of prohibition and the black market that comes with prohibition. So when people hear that there's the opportunity for individuals to grow for themselves, they immediately sort of leap to the scariest possible outcome. And what we're really saying is, let's look at other examples where people can produce things for themselves, like home brewers who can brew their own beer, but who have no incentive to take their beer out to the street and try and sell it on the black market or distill gin in their bathtub, because there's no economic incentive to do that. They can brew the beer for themselves, they can share it with their adult friends, but there's no economic incentive to try and sell it illegally. And that's what we're saying with marijuana. Once we've remove the black market and remove the profit incentive that a lot of illegal growers are benefiting from, we're going to see a much more common sense approach from individuals and from businesses.
Who would be allowed to buy marijuana in these state-regulated stores?
Adults 21 and over.
Anybody, though. You wouldn't need a medical marijuana card the way you do now.
That's correct.
In order to somehow get it.
That's correct. So, Measure 80 leaves the existing Oregon medical marijuana program intact the way it is. But we think it's an important point for people to think about. The medical marijuana program, even with the amount of people that are enrolled in the program, there is still a stigma attached to marijuana use because of its current prohibited status. And we believe that there will be people, seniors especially, who will be more open to looking at medical marijuana for their ailments if there weren't that stigma attached. So the program stays the same, but we're giving people a more straightforward, more proven way to access.
John Trumbo, what's your response so far to Roy Kaufman laying out, in some respects, the look at prohibition example of why prohibition, he says, you know, didn't work for America when it was alcohol. Pot is the same. What's your response?
A couple of things come to mind. Number one, you're going to tax a substance, which is fine, except nobody knows what the tax rate is. And there's not going to be adequate oversight to make sure that people are paying their taxes. Case in point, DEA did a raid of a dispensary, a marijuana dispensary in San Francisco this spring, and they found $2.4 million in unreported cash in the owner's safe. So to say that you're going to tax it and it's going to bring in $140 million, I'm not sure where they came with that number, but more importantly, why would a person want to go and pay $200 an ounce for marijuana at a store when they can grow all they want themselves?
Roy Coffin, so how do you answer that question? And he brought up a couple. One is your overall estimates for how much tax revenue this would bring in the state. And obviously, Oregonians would like more tax revenue to pay for more services. Many Oregonians would. So there are two parts here. One, how do you arrive at your calculation for how much this would bring into the state? And then two, this question of that John just brought up, why would people pay for pot if they could just grow their own?
Right. Well, let's answer the first question first, which is the source for a lot of this data comes from a Harvard economist named Jeffrey Meyer, and he's been studying this issue for more than a decade and has looked at the state-by-state and the national implications of legalizing, regulating, and taxing marijuana as opposed to prohibiting it. So we know that, according to his estimates, even conservatively, about $60 million a year in Oregon will be saved by law enforcement and public safety agencies who currently spend that much money on the enforcement, which means the police activity, the court activity, and the jail corrections costs. So we know that there's a large number there. We also know that if we look at similar industries that have been prohibited in the past, beer and wine being two very strong examples, you know, those were industries that were completely legal under alcohol prohibition in the last century. In 2010, those two industries combined were $5 billion industry for Oregon alone and tens of thousands of jobs. And that is everything from agricultural jobs on hops farms or on vineyards to marketing and white-collar jobs and across the spectrum and tourism income, which brings revenue to the state. And the question about tax, people not wanting to pay their taxes, well, this is nothing new and not unique to the marijuana industry. It was Al Capone, the famous gangster, was actually taken down for tax evasion. I mean, that's what he eventually went to prison for. And on the point about alcohol prohibition and its failure, it's important for people to understand Oregon in 1932 voted yes on something called Measure 7, which repealed alcohol prohibition a year before the federal government repealed alcohol prohibition, which is a really interesting analogy because people are saying, well, if the state of Oregon approves this, what does that mean for the federal government's prohibition? And we're saying we've already done this once, repealing something first and showing the federal government we have a better way to do it.
You know, you used the example of alcohol and the enormous impact that whether you're looking at brewers or distillers or winemaking that it has in Oregon as an example for why the legalization of pot might lead to a lot of money in for Oregon's tax coffers. Are you suggesting when you make that comparison that if pot were legalized, it would enter at some point into the same sort of social sphere that alcohol is right now, that happy hours among people who, you know, among work colleagues or Super Bowl parties, or that it would just be the kind of thing where people would think of it in the same way that they currently think about alcohol broadly?
I mean, the short answer is yes. I think we are looking at a state of national support for this issue that we've never seen before. I mean, this has trended up year after year. The latest polls from Rasmussen or Angus Reid in early 2012 showed 53% to 56% of Americans supporting legalization of marijuana and 67% of Americans saying they support the argument that the drug war has failed. So there is a greater acceptance of the fact that marijuana is an active market. It's an existing industry. It is an existing demand that we already have as a nation.
That's separate, though, from it being one that that does or doesn't have a stigma. And you yourself were saying earlier that you think there are some elderly people who might take advantage of the medical marijuana system if there weren't the stigma. John Trumbo, I'm curious about your take on this. If this were to pass, do you envision an Oregon with an overall a more lenient view of marijuana use?
What I see, if this passes, is an Oregon that is going to be put in a position where we're not going to be able to afford the ramifications. And I say that because you were talking about going to a Super Bowl party and everybody smoking a joint or whatever. Oregon has 5,333 certified police officers. Of those, 200 are certified drug recognition experts. If this measure passes, all police officers are going to, have to become drug recognition experts. And figuring that it's a 3-week class, and figuring the wages and benefits, you're looking at about $25.6 million. Just to train police officers to become drug recognition experts. And Oregon has yet to set a level of THC that would be judged to be under the influence. Oregon's alcohol is 0.08. What is it for marijuana? Nobody knows because they haven't set the standard yet. So,
Sheriff Trumbo, if I could just interject there. You're saying that the state would have to spend a lot more money for all these law enforcement officers, whether we're looking at sheriff's offices or police departments or potentially at the state level, so they could become sort of drug experts. Are they not already required to have some awareness of impairment, whether you're looking at alcohol, which in some ways I suppose is easier to test on the spot, or pot right now, or you know, over-the-counter antihistamines, which, you know, people might need to take, which can put you to sleep pretty quickly, or, say, prescription painkillers, all kinds of things, only some of which can be tested with a breathalyzer.
And that's true, but what happens is if one of my deputies stops somebody that they assume to be under the influence because of the test they give them, but it's not alcohol, we have to call a drug recognition expert in to do the evaluation so that you can have a case that you can take to court, because the courts only recognize drug recognition experts, which means that if you don't have one, you're going to have one. And if you only have one, they're going to get copious amounts of overtime because they're going to be called out all the time. So the other thing is that you have to take a urine sample from the person that is being arrested. That sample has to be sent to the crime lab in Portland, which means that they are going to be inundated with samples that are going to need to be tested. And nobody has put a cost factor on what that increase is going to be. And nobody has contacted the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training to find out what the cost of training all these officers is going to be. You can go to a 4-day class now and come out as a person expert in arresting the person under the influence of alcohol. To do that with drugs, it takes 3 weeks. It's a 3-week class, and that's going to be a huge expense. And so when I hear that we're going to save $60 million, I don't see that happening because of all the costs are going to be associated with just the driving part of it. And driving is going – incidences involving people under the influence of marijuana are obviously going to increase if this is passed. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
If I could jump in, and I respect the sheriff's service record. My grandfather was a public safety police officer as well. You know, I think one of the logical fallacies we hear from people who oppose this is basically saying, you know, this is a new industry, this is a new issue that's just popping up. We know that a lot of Oregonians already, for medicinal, recreational, or social uses, already use marijuana. They are already likely plenty of instances of people driving under the influence. We know that there are ways to test people for sobriety. We know that police always have, a probable cause to search a vehicle if it smells like marijuana, if there's paraphernalia on the seat. So this is not a new issue that we're introducing. This is not a new market that we're introducing to Oregon. It's a way to say we need to regulate this, we need to tax it, we need to get the benefits out of it as opposed to prohibiting it and just absorbing all the costs.
But that is a small percentage of the people. Now, if you open that up to anybody that wants to use it or try it for the first time, you're going to expand the market or the availability of somebody driving down the road under the influence. 2009 National Highway Transportation Safety Administration report said that 28% of all fatality-injured drivers tested positive for marijuana use. In 2011, 50 people were killed by marijuana-impaired drivers in Colorado, and a study of 182 truck accidents causing death found 12.8% of the drivers were under the influence of marijuana.
Sheriff Trumbo, we got to take a quick break. We're going to come back, but I want to bring up for our callers and for both of you a point you just made. Basically, if I understand you correctly, saying if this were to pass, more people would be smoking marijuana. It's a question I put to our listeners. If you don't grow or smoke pot right now, would you start if it were made legal? Our website, opb.org/thinkoutloud. Our number is 1-888-665-5865. We'll be right back. You're listening to Think Out Loud on OPB. I'm Dave Miller. If you're just joining us, we're talking about Measure 80 right now. It would let adults in Oregon grow their own pot for personal use without a license. It would also let Oregonians buy pot at state-licensed stores. What's your experience with pot or with Oregon's current medical marijuana law? And how does that experience affect how you're going to vote? Our website, opb.org/thinkoutloud. Our number is 1-888-665-5865. Joseph has called in from Portland. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Pleasure to be on.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm a former grower of medical marijuana for myself and a relative, an elderly relative. And my experience with the medical marijuana program as it exists is that, for one, the registration fees and process are difficult, and the fees, I think, are prohibitively expensive. And also, accessibility is an issue, because I'm thinking about my older relative and how difficult it would be for her to get medical marijuana or marijuana for medicinal use, like, on the street if she didn't have a relationship with me. And then relating to revenue from tax marijuana, it's I think that it would bring in a lot of revenue, because growing marijuana is a lot more expensive, especially here in the metro area, than I think the sheriff would describe, because just paying for water, electricity, and nutrients is very expensive. So being able to go and buy it at a store would, I think, make it a lot more accessible for responsible adults. And that's my comment.
Joseph, you said that you used to be a medical marijuana grower for yourself and for an elderly family member. Do you still use medical marijuana or marijuana?
I don't need it medically anymore, because I went through physical training that has helped my condition. But I do use it recreationally. And one of the things is about criminalizing marijuana as it exists is that it is, especially here in the metro area, it is so easy to get that I don't see why the state shouldn't be making money off of it, since it's already a very accessible market for people my age, and I'm in my 20s.
Joseph, thanks very much for your call.
Thanks, Joseph. I think there are a couple points that Joseph brought up about accessibility and about usage, and keying off something that the sheriff mentioned before the break. You know, we know that from looking at other markets, from looking at other countries, that the usage levels don't increase in the long run. Just like alcohol usage didn't increase significantly after prohibition, as a matter of fact, it decreased, especially among youth. And that's exactly what we're talking about with this issue. To Joseph's point, even though it's easy to get, it is still prohibited. There are still costs associated with it. And for youth, this is the real issue. If you're a parent, I have three small children. If you're a parent, this is an issue for you to support, because right now we have tight controls over the sale of liquor to minors, and liquor usage by youth is at a record low. The usage of tobacco products by youth is at a record low, and yet the usage by teens of marijuana is at a record high. And that's because we regulate and educate and enforce on those others and not on this.
I want to come back to this question of youth use because it's a big one, and it's a part of actually of both of the campaigns, for and against. But we got a couple calls in response to that question earlier about whether you'd smoke more or less if Measure 80 were to pass. Kim has called in from Lake Oswego. Kim, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just called to simply say that I would not change my habits simply because legislation has changed the law.
And what are your habits?
I don't smoke now. I wouldn't smoke later. I mean, it's not a part of my life.
Kim, thanks very much for that call, that simple answer. Chris has called in from Coburg. Chris, what about you?
I think that it's a novelty factor. I think that, you know, if it's legal, big deal. You know, if you can't get something, there's more of an allure, I think, than if it's available
yeah.
and
so,
open.
So do you smoke marijuana now, Chris?
I've been known to. I'm a senior citizen. So for me, it helps with rheumatoid arthritis. So
you've been
I'm
known to.
For
do you,
it,
do you have
I,
a medical marijuana license right now, a card?
I do.
You
yes.
do?
Yes.
So do you think this wouldn't affect your usage if it were to pass, if you no longer needed a medical marijuana card to smoke legally?
Actually, I'm kind of torn about the legalization part versus the medical part, because I think the medical part is, is something that should be protected. I think there should be both sides of the thing, that patients should be able to get it, and also if it's legalized, there should be, parts open for the public.
Chris, thanks very much for that call. Scott has called in from Portland. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
Doing great. Go ahead.
Well, basically, I wanted to just pose the question, why does it need to be smokable for all the medical marijuana people? Why wouldn't you just go ahead and dispense, by a physician or whatever, a THC tablet? So, anybody that I know that, has a card or whatever else, it shrouds just a way to go ahead and, get it and, be able to go ahead and recreationally use it.
All right, Scott, thanks very much. Roy, do you want to answer that?
Yeah, well, I think to reiterate, Measure 80 keeps the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program in place the way it is currently. The question of usage of the medical benefits, I think that's a much longer discussion, although there have been clear tons and tons of studies that show the medicinal values. But what we're really talking about here is legalizing, regulating, and taxing a market that is not going anywhere. The marijuana is Oregon's largest cash crop right now. And basically, we're saying that we're currently spending a great deal of money to prohibit this market, and we're getting worse results for it, like I mentioned before. 8 out of 10 high school students say it is very easy for them to get marijuana. It is much harder for them to get liquor, and it's because we raised the drinking age to 21 in the 1970s. We took liquor and put it behind the counter. We forced people to ask for ID. We launched an education program teaching kids that liquor is for adults. And even though there is still youth drinking, it is a fraction of what current youth marijuana use is, and that's because when you prohibit something, like an earlier caller said, you make it really, really sexy and attractive. When you
Dave?
Regulate it, you make it not so much.
John Trumbo, yes, Umatilla County Sheriff. I'd love to get your take on this.
I want to jump in here real quick. A couple of things come to mind. Number one, I understand what is being said. The problem is that if your dad can grow it in his backyard, why is he going to buy it? And in 1978 through 1990, Alaska law permitted adults to possess small amounts of marijuana, and use amongst children was 51%. 1990, they repealed that law. So I think that if you're going to be able to grow it in your backyard or in your field, why would the children not have access to it? They will. I mean, it's obvious they're going to have access to it.
So, Sheriff Trumbo, let me answer that question for you. I appreciate the question. With liquor laws, we have said it is illegal to sell liquor to a minor. It is illegal to provide liquor to a minor. And if you provide liquor to a minor and that minor goes on to be involved in a hit and run, for example, or some sort of an accident, then the person who provided the alcohol is legally culpable. And so what we are saying is, let's look at the models that have worked better. And let's put in place the similar kinds of incentives or consequences that we have around alcohol to be more effective around marijuana. There's going to have to be an education component that says, you know, this is for adults 21 and over. This is not for youth. If you provide it to youth, you will be punished. And we have language in the measure already around that issue. But the reality is individuals who want to grow it for themselves, you know, will do so just like homebrewers brew for themselves or winemakers make for themselves. But they will always have the option to go to the store and get their favorite brand, their favorite six-pack, because it's cheaper and easier and they know what they're buying.
Sheriff Trumbo, are you arguing that if Measure 80 were to pass, that more young Oregonians, say 18 and under, would use pot?
You know, I don't know because I can't foresee the future, but I can tell you it's certainly going to be a lot easier to get their hands on it because even if a person's parents aren't growing their own, they're going to have friends that have parents that are, and they're going to go out there and they're going to raid their marijuana stash.
Based on what you see right now as a sheriff in Umatilla County, I mean, do you think it's particularly hard right now for any Oregonian to get their hands on marijuana?
No.
But you're saying it would be even easier.
Oh, absolutely, because there is a certain segment of society that understands it's against the law and they won't cross that line. You make it legal, they're going to cross the line.
And you know what? I think we are trying to get to the same end, Sheriff, and we're going on different roads. Because
do you really want the same end? You think that there's nothing wrong with smoking marijuana, and Sheriff Trumbo thinks there is.
No, I think that we need to be able to recognize that adults who are choosing to use marijuana now are choosing to use marijuana regardless, and the people who choose to not use marijuana are probably going to stay in making that same choice, just like the caller earlier. The difference is that we are basically taking one model of regulation, which is an effective regulation around liquor, and we are saying that works really well in trying to cut down youth access and trying to make it harder for teens to get liquor. And we are taking a completely different model for marijuana that makes prohibition more attractive.
So let's put this in even perhaps simpler terms. And John Trumbo, let's forget for a second about somebody driving under the influence of anything. Let's forget about 14-year-olds and imagine a 50-year-old woman sitting at home in Corvallis. Is there anything wrong with her smoking a joint some afternoon and listening to music for a few hours?
If she wants to do it in her own home and not get in a car and drive, that's her business.
But currently she's a criminal if she does that.
Oh, well.
Well, no, but you say, oh, well, Sheriff Trumbo. But in a sense, that little story is one possibility of where Measure 80 ends up.
The problem is that it's not isolated to the lady that's 50 years old sitting in Corvallis smoking a joint in her living room. The problem is that once you open the door, you get the kids involved, you get organized crime involved, you get everybody else involved because now all of a sudden it's a legal substance.
Well, I tell you, I'm glad you brought up organized crime because I think the reality is if you were to manage to get some drug dealers or some members of the cartel on the phone, they would likely oppose Measure 80 because it would cut into their profit incentive. When we take a product and we make it illegal, we make it very, very valuable and very, very profit heavy. When we regulate it, we put taxation models in place, we force licensing into the situation, we're encouraging people to operate in illegal above board manner.
And I suspect that probably organized crime would support the passage of Measure 80 because if they did, they could go out and they could buy a 160-acre wheat field and turn it into marijuana patch. The marijuana that is seized in Oregon on these large 100,000 plant grows is not being consumed in Oregon. It's been sent all over the United States.
So on that, just to put a sharper point on that, especially given what we've been reading, many of us have been reading in The Oregonian over the last couple of days about the clear abuses of the current medical marijuana program, mm-hmm. What would prevent cartels or anybody from getting a group of individuals to buy marijuana theoretically for their own use or to grow it for their own personal use, but then having it sort of go collectively to some big criminal organization and being sold all over the country?
Right. So that's a great question. Again, whether we're talking about Oregon or we're talking about the national market, the fact is prices are at inflated levels because it is a black market. Because it is illegal, the profit incentive is incredibly strong, and that's what pulls in the criminal element. Oregon is one of three states in the United States to have a legalization and regulation initiative for marijuana on the ballot this November. Colorado and Washington also have measures, and we believe that even if one of these three states were to pass, but hopefully if two or all three were to be successful, it would force the federal government to recognize the reality that the drug war has failed, that people all the way from Bill Bradbury in our state to Richard Branson at Virgin have called for an end to the drug war, and that includes groups like the NAACP and Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a law enforcement group that endorses Measure 80 because they are retired police officers who have seen that what we are doing now does not work.
Impacts wrote on our blog, Measure 80 would allow anyone 21 or older to grow marijuana anywhere in a vacant lot near a schoolyard or in a house next door to you. A user could grow football fields of marijuana without any restrictions for personal use. Is that true? Would there be any restrictions on how much you could grow or where you could grow it?
There will absolutely be restrictions. One of the things that Measure 80 does is it sets up an Oregon Cannabis Commission where the seven members that first year are appointed by the governor. So Governor Kitzhaber would appoint the seven members of this commission, and the commission would be given the responsibility to come up with the administrative rules and the recommendations to the legislature around these exact questions. There's no doubt that there will be a lot of questions that come up from legislators, from county and city folk, about zoning, about taxing, about
licensing.
What about
how much an individual could buy in a state licensed store? Is there any reason I couldn't go in and buy 50 pounds if I wanted to?
You can't go into an OLCC liquor store and buy, 50 bottles of Jack Daniels able to prove.
Is that true?
It is true.
Couldn't I go to as many stores as I want in the course of a day and buy more liquor than anybody would have anything to do with?
I think this is exactly the issue. We have policies in place around liquor sales in Oregon that we are constantly trying to make better, but we have to compare it to what the alternative is. The alternative is full prohibition, the alternative to regulation. So what we're saying is this will be a work in progress. We will continue to prove that we have a way to do it in Oregon that sets a model for the nation, but we don't say that Measure 80 can predict every single question. That's why we create a commission of governor-appointed experts to be able to answer these kinds of questions.
Paul has called in from Salem. Paul, welcome to Think Out Loud.
Hi.
Hey, go ahead.
Well, matter of fact, I'm sitting in my shop and I'm trimming a marijuana plant. I do have a medical marijuana card because of my cancer. I also have a grower's card because I don't know where I can find it. And, I've been forced to grow a plant. And I know that the sheriff said, why would anyone buy marijuana when they can grow it on their own? I would be happy to buy it because it's a lot of work to grow and harvest.
Yeah, and I appreciate Paul's call, and I think that to get to Paul's point and to the sheriff's point about people growing large amounts, the reality is we currently are seeing very inflated prices for marijuana because it is an illegal market that it has this quasi-gray area of medical marijuana. And the Oregonian covered it, and I was on a show this morning where I said the front page of the Oregonian, pot too much, too profitable, is an argument for Measure 80 because it is saying, as an illegal market, the profit motives and the black market prices are ridiculous, and it's very hard for illegal operators to stay away from that kind of draw. When we regulate it and we bring the price to a point that is more realistic, that is more on par with free markets, we're going to see the price come down, and the incentive to operate these kinds of large grows will go away.
Do you have you've talked about this a couple times, bringing the price down because it wouldn't be a black market anymore. I looked on the Price of Weed blog. It's a crowdsourced website with people from all over the world putting in how much they paid for various amounts of marijuana. And Oregon right now is the cheapest state in the country for what people identify themselves as high quality pot, $227 an ounce. That works out to a little under $60 for a quarter of an ounce. You're saying the price would be lower. So how much do you think pot would cost if there were no longer a black market?
Well, we don't set the price in the measure. That's one of the core responsibilities of the Oregon Cannabis Commission
is to set that
price. I'm not going to guess what the price is, but it's certainly going to come down. There are economists at the RAND Corporation, certainly a very trusted organization, that have done a lot of research on this topic. And the question comes to not just what would the price come down to, but when you factor in the excise tax level. You need to find the right level of tax so that you're not continuing to foster a black market and you're also not foregoing revenue to the state. So it's not just what it would cost for somebody to grow it as a licensed farmer or licensed gardener. It would be what's the right level of taxation for the state so that we can get that revenue and not encourage the black market.
Roy Kaufman and John Trumbo, thanks so much for talking about this.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Roy Kaufman is the communications director for Measure 80. John Trumbo is Umatilla County Sheriff. He's a member and a past president of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Before we head to the break, here's a quick scheduling note. On Tuesday, October 9th, we're going to be talking to Jefferson Smith and Charlie Hales. They're obviously the two finalists for the job of Portland mayor. The show takes place here at OPB in our TV studio. We'd love to have you in the audience. The tickets are free, but you have to reserve them ahead of time. You can find all the details and reserve your seat at opb.org/thinkoutloud. In just a moment, it is the attention spans of 4-year-olds and why they're worth paying attention to.